Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way. Hey, everybody. Okay, welcome back to Home But Not Alone. Today we're going to talk about idolatry, okay? Not adultery, idolatry. So like making idols out of something. I just thought maybe I said it funny and kind of sounded like the wrong thing. Okay, we're talking about it in a way that maybe most of us have never considered. So not like the golden calf or like your job or your money, but we're talking about making an idol out of the family and what that means and how to not to. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. All right. You said you had a story. I want to hear it. I want to hear what's going on.
So this weekend, we went out in the woods for a family hike. It was a real nice hike. And I was taking some pictures of the kids, you know, walking along. And it was beautiful. The leaves are changing colors, right? Oh, it's beautiful. I got to take some pictures so I can share with our friends on Facebook and everything. And then the sounds, we walked by. It was really cool. There was the stream. It was coming out from like underground. And it was trickling over the rocks and it sounded really cool. So I took a little video so we could share the sounds. But also, you know that smell? Like it smells like fall and like you're out in the wild, in the woods, and it's like the fresh air, it smells so good. And so I said to my husband, like, wouldn't it be cool if we could share smells digitally too? Like, why are we limited to only having to share the things that we see and the things that we hear? Like, I was like, I could share these pictures and these videos on Facebook, but nobody's going to know how amazing this day
smelled. Wow.
My husband did not appreciate that. He doesn't think that would be cool.
Well, I mean, just think about it this way. People misuse and abuse technology in regards to the human body in so many ways. You know they would start doing that with smells as well. Yeah.
You
open up an inappropriate Snapchat, at your job, that's problematic. You open an inappropriate smell chat, everybody's going to know. and that's going to...
Just think about it. Like, so the technology that allows us to send what we see and what we hear, how come there's not a technology that allows us to send the other senses?
Well, because I watched a math comedy video recently. And yes, that's a thing. This guy's a former math teacher turned comedian. Yeah. And he does really nerdy humor. And he did a whole thing on how every picture, every digital picture is just like an Excel spreadsheet. And it's true. He proved it in front of us or at the conference he was doing. And so maybe it's because there is no spreadsheet way of doing.
I'm Googling it.
You're Googling.
Can you send smells digitally?
No, don't waste time. All right. This is let's talk about idolatry and not digital smells. I've never been so excited to move on to the topic of idolatry before. Okay. So now you mentioned some of this
idolatry.
Before.
Hang on. This
yes.
is a serious topic.
Yes. You All mentioned right. some of this before. Does that work ever be okay, now we're serious? That's
yeah, I'm ready.
It works for you. It doesn't work
Bring
for me.
It on.
Okay. So you mentioned some of this before, but like because of the examples given in the Old Testament or like our overexposure to a Charlton Heston movie, you know, like the Ten Commandments, most people do exactly what you were talking about earlier when they think about idolatry. They're like, well, it's like the golden calf. And they're like, I don't kneel before a physical idol, a golden calf, a statue of something that isn't divine, like, you know, or, you know, that isn't a saint or whatever it is, you know, like I don't kneel before any of these things. I don't believe that a material object is God. Therefore, idolatry is basically a thing of the pagan past. And the thing is that for the modern person, most sins of idolatry, they vary from everything from worshiping the planet, which happens all the time,
yeah.
that when people put the planet before human lives, which happens constantly, unfortunately, in our modern culture, to worshiping ourselves, which we often do when it comes to like, well, I need more social media followers, or I posted something just with the intention of, I bet this will get me more likes. And it's like, yeah, there's a degree of idolatry there. And so, you know, right. It is possible to make an idol out of anything. And it's a grave and serious thing to do. This is one reason why I've noticed that Protestants struggle so much with both. I've noticed that Protestants seem to struggle mostly with Marian dogmas and the teachings on the Eucharist. And I actually told a Protestant pastor one time, I said, here's the thing. If, as a Catholic, I'm wrong, I'm not. But if, as a Catholic, I'm wrong about the Eucharist, then that makes me an idolater. And yeah, that is a right. very grave and serious thing. So if I was not Catholic, and if any one of you who are watching or listening to this is not Catholic, if you're Protestant specifically, I completely understand why there is that disconnect. And I've heard a lot of people who are converts to Catholicism from a Protestant Protestant faith, that they've said that is often for a lot of Protestants who become Catholic, those two things are the most difficult to overcome, because it is challenging to understand why our elevation of Mary is not idolatry. It's not, but you have to understand the context, the accuracy of the teaching. And it's nice to also know that in the early part of the church, I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, there was a heresy where a group of people were offering the Mass, the sacrifice of the Mass to Mary, to which the Catholic Church said, stop it. That is a heresy. Do not do it. So we actually condemned Marian worship very early in Christianity.
Oh, that question still comes up, though. Why do you worship Mary? Like, we don't.
Yes.
We see why that would be a problem if you did, but you have to understand, like, what is this honor that we give to her? It's not making her an idol.
And anyway, so just in all of these things, I bring this up. I do write down what the heresy is.
It's, look
at it. Calloridianism. It's called the Calloridians. The heresy was then called Calloridianism, because they worshipped Mary as a goddess, and they offered the sacrifice of the Mass to her, which is a no-go. And that was in the 300s. So anyway, as I mentioned, you can make an idol out of anything. It's serious, and we need to be aware of what is actually idolatry and when it, all these things. And we need to take it seriously and work to not idolize things. And even the family can be made into an idol. And so, Sarah, what do you?
Jesus talks to us about this in the gospel, about making the family an idol. If you look in there. So first of all, Luke chapter 10, verse 27, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so that tells us the order in which we need to put things. I mean, this is the first commandment. You should love the God, I am the Lord your God. You should not put other gods before me. Okay, so God has to come first before everything. And then later on in the gospel, Luke chapter 14, verse 26, Jesus says something that really disturbs a lot of us. It can come off really harsh and it's hard to understand. He says, whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple. And so that word hate kind of catches us like, whoa, you're telling me to hate my family. And I heard something recently about the translation of this word hate. Like, obviously, God is not telling us to actually literally hate these things, because in that list is included even your life itself. But just up here in the verse I read before, it says love your neighbor as yourself. So clearly, you're supposed to have a certain type of love for yourself. Yeah. But what it means in terms of hate, that word translates into the meaning of loving these things less, like putting them second, and God comes first. Okay, so it's saying whoever comes to me and hasn't put your father and your mother second to me, hasn't put your wife and children second to me, your brothers and sisters, and even your own life second to me, God, this is Jesus speaking, cannot be my disciple. Right. So we have to love God more than anything and anyone in the world, even our family, our parents, our siblings, our spouses, our children. So they just love the sweet little snuggly babies so much. You have to love God more.
Well, and let me throw in there real quick in the Jesus would never say to actually hate father and mother, because by doing so, he would be telling you to break a commandment.
Right.
And he does not do that. And if anything, the life of Jesus shows us how much we must honor our mother and father.
Yeah.
So the way he lived it and everything he did. But yeah, that, and just a side note on the strength, soul, heart, and loving Jesus, loving God with all that. I heard, I think it was from Brant Petrie, who's a Catholic scholar, and he's really an expert on the early church and the first century Judaism. And he said that in that culture at that time, they would have understood strength to be like material strength. So your money, your means, all of that. So not just, you know, oh, well, physically, I'm going to go punch a heretic or something, or I'm going to go move chairs at church, which requires strength. I don't know, something like that.
Just some real powerful lunges when you're genuflecting, like in your way into the pew.
Yes, just some intense genuflecting, like you go down so hard that your knee goes through the tile floor or whatever it is. But they would have understood strength as material strength in
okay,
that way.
Right.
So anyway,
sure.
Go ahead. All right, I don't
know. Okay, so that's okay. That's a really good point. So here's the good news, though. When we love God first, then we're able to love all these other people more, like more than we could have if we put them above God. So the more you love God and enter into God's love, you know, that virtue of charity towards God, you know, increases our capacity to have more charity towards our neighbor, you know, towards our family. And so that's what Christ requires of us. And if we want to love our family more, like if you want to love your spouse more or your children more, don't love them more by putting them above God. Love them more by loving God more so you can grow in capacity to love them more. So that's like the good news here about putting things in the right order, because you got God and your family, and as they move up, they'll move up together. So here's an interesting thing. We all have broken relationships in our lives. Okay, so we receive love from all, you know, the people in our family, but most of all, we receive love from God. And love from God is perfect, it's unconditional, it is infinite. But love from any human, no matter, you know, how good they are, any human in our life, it's not going to be as perfect. Yeah, it's going to be a lot smaller compared to God's love. And so when we expect, you know, when we make an idol of our family and we expect these people to provide for all the love that we need in our lives, right? And we expect these people to fulfill us. Well, these people in our lives are fallen humans just like we are. You know, we know that we are not perfect in loving others, and these people in our lives are not perfect in loving us in return. No. But if we expect them to be, and we put them, you know, as the highest object of our love, then when they inevitably fail us and hurt us in some way, then, you know, our lives can be shattered. But if we focus on, you know, God as the ultimate object of our love and receiving his unconditional love and knowing only that, you know, only by being loved by him will we be fulfilled, and can we have that perfectly fulfilling relationship and enter into that love, then, you know, when we have these broken relationships in our family, you know, whoever it might be in your, well, so you all got that, think about that broken relationship that you have in your family, you know, you all have one. If we love God first and we expect to be fulfilled by God, then we're able to love our family members better through these broken relationships, because we know that our fulfillment does not come from being loved perfectly by them. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think it makes perfect sense. I think there are a lot of things that a lot of times we know intellectually, like, oh, okay, well, my value comes from God. My identity comes from God. Like maybe we've been taught this, or we just kind of instinctually understand it. But then whether it be, you know, in this case, we're talking about family, whether it be a familial relationship or a friendship, or whether it be a job, or, you know, especially this happens a lot with kids, with grades and sports and such, that we start to then place our value on these fragile things that will fail at some point. And we essentially then make them God. And there's, you know, right. We sit there and say, we depend on this as if it was God, and they become that thing or person becomes our own personal God. And that is not only bad and sinful and problematic and it will hurt us, but it's completely unfair to whoever we're doing that to, or yeah. whatever we're doing right. that to, because no one can do that. So yeah, makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. Yeah. So basically it comes down to anything we love more than God is an idol. Is a false god, you know, breaks that first commandment, yeah. even if it's our family that we're loving more than God. And that will yeah. never, worshiping an idol, making an idol out of our family, making an idol out of anything will never fulfill our lives. So I feel like what we've been talking about is like very theoretical, like we're throwing out all these ideas. Can we talk about like maybe some concrete examples of what it might mean or what it might look like, different ways that we are tempted to make an idol of the family?
Yes, absolutely. So I have some examples written down here. The first one, and I've seen this a lot, is worshiping family size.
Yeah.
And I know that this is difficult for a lot of us because of either, you know, being married later in life, or being married earlier in life, or, you know, still being single, or yeah, longing to be married, longing to have kids, fertility issues, trying to avoid pregnancy and not being successful with that. So there are any number of ways that this can be a very personal and difficult topic. But I think what we do often, and I was talking with a very smart friend of mine about this earlier, is we'll sit there and do things like, oh, look at that family with eight kids, that Catholic family of eight kids. They're so Catholic. And we're like, we have no idea what's going on in their hearts no, or right. their home. Like, that might not be the assumption. Or, you know, I think a lot of people have done this once or twice where they sit there and go, oh, a couple only has X number of kids.
Right. One kid.
You think they're doing something they shouldn't be doing to limit their family size. Like
Meanwhile, you don't know that they tried for 14 years to have that one kid, and yeah. they're open to the life and the yeah. family God gave them. This is a yes. good one. And this is one, particularly for me. So I've talked about this on the blog that, you know, we're going through some fertility treatment and we're struggling with that right now. But one of the things that I've learned, you know, we always wanted that big family, you know, that ideal big Catholic family. But one of the things I'm learning right now is to trust God more in the family that He has planned for us, and then to enter into loving the family that I have right in front of me, loving my husband more, loving my children more, and not like placing my hope in a certain number of kids. So yeah, I can definitely see how that temptation to worship the family size yeah. rather than, you know, loving God's plan for the family that He's giving you.
Yeah. Another example is seeing sacramental marriage as fulfilling your wants or desires. It drives me nuts when I see somebody, you know, saying, oh, well, we're getting divorced. We just don't make each other happy anymore. And to which part of my first thought on that is, do you think marriage is about you being happy? Because right. hopefully you're happy within marriage. Like, I don't think marriage should be just all about people are just suffering and miserable all the time. If that's happening, something's wrong. But a lot of people say, oh, no, now we're just better off as friends. We're not as happy anymore as we used to be with this, that, or another thing. And I think about that. I'm like, no, marriage is supposed to be a sanctifying thing. It's supposed to be about self-giving. Now, hopefully it's two people giving of themselves.
Right.
And sometimes I'm very well aware that it is not always, and that that makes it so much more difficult.
Right.
But the idea of, you know, oh, well, this person doesn't make me happy, or I want them to just make me happy and make my marriage about me. And I think, yeah, we have a right, I think, to say, well, I want my spouse to treat me well. I want them to love me.
Oh, yeah.
I want them to care for me. 100%. We don't have a right to then say my spouse should be making me happy all the time. Like, no, that is elevating someone. Like I said before,
yeah.
then you're elevating them to a godlike status, and they are not God. So
yeah, that's a good point.
another one, and this can be similar to family size, but not always. Viewing other families as being perfect or being the ideal, with the exception of, say, the Holy Family. it's really hard to beat that family. But I know I've done this where I'll sit there and I'll say, oh, man, I wish that I was the dad who was able to get up at 5 a.m. and go for a run and be in great shape and then be at 6 a.m. mass every single morning. And then I'm home just in time to get my kids out of bed. But in reality, I'm like, what do you mean I have to get up before 9 a.m.? That's not, you know, and some of it is.
Or I just wish my family was the one whose kids sit still at mass.
there are occasionally families like that.
My kids do not do that.
I'm thinking, what are you guys doing right? Well, on one hand, maybe they're doing something right. And on the other hand, maybe their kids are scared of them and their kids are actually afraid of them like, I must behave. Also, children have different temperaments.
Different temperaments.
So if they were raising our children, they would not be the one with children sitting still.
That's right.
So we cannot view other families as being perfect or the ideal, because every family has their struggles, their flaws, their whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Another one, and I mentioned this before a little bit, but I think I did, but posting like family pictures on social media, not as a way of sharing, but as a way of getting attention. Mm. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah. So you had talked about posting your own pictures just to kind of get attention, but this is even worse, because then not only are you making the family an idol, you're using your family for your own selfish purposes here.
Yeah. And I think intent has a lot to do with this. It's not wrong to make an Instagram account just for your baby. I don't know why people do it. If one of you who is watching or listening has done that, please let me know why, because no one's ever told me why. I'm like,
maybe they have the cutest baby in the world and they
could be it.
Can't help but let everybody see that cute baby.
That could be it. But we just have to be careful not to share things for the sake of saying, look at me, look at me, look at me. That is making an idol out of the family. It's making an idol out of individual family members and out of the self.
Yeah.
We have just a few more real quick. Not living the faith publicly, like things like praying in a restaurant for fear of being judged. I know that I still hear from people where they're like, oh, that's really hard for me. I love when I hear.
So you want your family to look a certain way.
Yes.
So you don't want to be like that weird family at the restaurant that all makes those crazy hand symbols, sign of the cross.
Yes.
And says those crazy chant prayers. Okay. All right.
Yes. Thank you for taking my thoughts and putting them into words that make sense.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. You did that. I'm
just trying to
that.
Understand.
That makes a lot. That you made me make sense. So but we need, in that case, we are making an idol out of the family, not in the way of being like, look at this religious family or look at how religious we are, but in the opposite of being like, I don't want people to think we're odd. I want people to think we fit in, we belong, we're normal, we're not unusual, and I don't want them to think anything else. In that case, we're making an idol out of the family, in that the perception that other people have of our family, people we may never see again, their perceptions of our family is more important than actually thanking God for the delicious chicken fingers you're about to eat. Okay. Yeah. You know, like that's, or whatever you order. I don't know.
Whatever aspect of living out the faith. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. That's one example that popped into my head in that way, but
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one, unwilling to admit faults, being unwilling to admit faults to your children.
Okay.
Because in that case, you're not making an idol necessarily out of the whole family.
Okay.
But you're making an idol out of yourself. And I think it can be really easy to fall into the habit of being like, I'm the parent, I'm in charge. And as the in charge authority, I don't have to apologize when I make mistakes, or to just forget to apologize when we make mistakes, to forget to say, yeah, I was wrong there. I raised my voice recently, and one of my children looked at me and said, you need to say sorry for yelling. And I thought, you're not wrong.
Oh, man.
but I just didn't expect to be called out on it. So, but
and it was, that's awesome.
It was actually a really good reminder. And I was like, yeah, I was, that was a mistake. That was not my, that was me, not me at my best. Right. And since we're not always at our best, we have to be willing to admit that, even no matter what form that comes in. Right.
Well, this makes me think of my grandmother always tells me these stories about dinner tables, you know, their dinner table in their house growing up, and children were supposed to be seen and not heard. And so it's almost a mentality of, you know, putting yourself as parents, your dignity, like above the dignity of your children, like ignoring the dignity of your children. And that is, you know, making an idol, maybe not, like you said, of the entire family, but of the concept of parenthood, that being a parent makes you a god over these children. And that's very, you know, demeaning to the children and not respecting their dignity. So, yeah, we gotta say sorry.
Yeah, I remember I was looking over some old stuff recently, and I remember there was about a year and a half ago, I was at Mass with both my kids by myself. My wife, who's a nurse, was working, and the you know, they don't sit still. They're crazy. And, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, no, the old man's going to be mad. Well, there was this one usher, and he's just the nicest man in the world. And I said something about, you know, there are people out there who think that children should be seen and not heard. And he looks at me and he says, have they met children? Children are always heard. They're always, that's what they're supposed to do. God made them that way. And I was like, okay, I like this guy. It was something along those lines, but he gets it. And he was clearly, based on what he and I've talked about over the last couple of years, he was very involved as a father. Was not as common when he was younger for, you know, fathers to be as involved, but he clearly was somewhat involved or involved enough to be aware of like, yeah, no, I was there. That's what I dealt with. So, and I think that's another thing is I mentioned before living the faith publicly, we go to Mass and we're like, oh, my kids aren't behaving. And I'm worried that other people are going to be mad that my kid, or they're going to say things to me. Well, if somebody says something to you about that and you're doing your best, that person's wrong, not you. So don't try and reshape the situation to fit the person who's wrong. So,
We talked about this before.
I'm sure we have. I have very strong opinions on this.
I always text you when I come out of Mass just to get that reassurance when my kids are terrible.
Well, and I've had people respond to me on social media to say things like, well, you know, you can't just let them run wild. There's another side to this. And I'm like, I never said you just let them get away with murder. No, like that's not the same thing as acknowledging age appropriate behavior. Those are two very different things. And people are like, well, there's just a second side to this. I'm like, no, there's not. That's a completely different topic. Do not lump in.
You tell
parents.
My toddler there's another side to this.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly. Yeah. Go
all
ahead.
All right. That's, so if you want to love your family more, we invite you to take some time and really examine your heart to discern whether you're loving God most. Okay. Or if you're letting your love of your family get in the way of loving God. Okay. So if you are treating your family as an idol, make it a point to start working on putting God back in first place in your life so that he can give you the grace to love your family more.
All right. Well, hey, we just want to thank everybody for watching and listening today. And
go Google television.
And we want to just, if you could subscribe, please. If you could subscribe either to the audio podcast or the YouTube channel, leave us a little like or a comment. That helps. We appreciate it. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com and on social media at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at chastelove.org or on Facebook and Instagram at TheChastelove. Now, replace all the cups, adult and child, all the cups in your house with exactly the same cup. So you only have one size, one shape, and one color of cup. Sure, you'll end up drinking alcohol out of a kid's cup, but at least no one will be bugging you about, well, I want the only orange cup. You'll never have to deal with that again. And remember, you're never alone.